Having discussed prehistoric world events in the last two parshiyos, we begin the story of what will become the Jewish people with the parsha of Lech Lecha. And as we know, the pasuk states, "Vayomer Hashem al Avram," the opening pasuk of the parsha, Perik Yud Beis, pasuk Aleph. Hashem says to Avram, "Lech Lecha, go for yourself, me'artzecha, mimoladetcha, mebeis avicha, from your land, your birthplace, your father's household." El Ha'aretz Asher Ar'echa, to the land I will show you, none other than Eretz Kana'an. And a very interesting comment with regards to this command, shall we say, this nisoyon of Lech Lecha, of Hashem's words to Avram to go, is found in the writings of one of the Rishonim, the Ralbag. Ralbag, Rabbeinu Levi ben Gershom, who, he's one of the greats, he has a peirush on the Chumash, but takol toloi b'mazel, it doesn't tend to be a peirush that is quoted as often as others, even though, of course, that's not in any way a reflection on the stature of the Ralbag himself. And he says something of a chiddush. There are three settings, shall we say, from which Avram is told to go. His land, his birthplace, his father's household. Says the Ralbag, it seems quite clear from the Psukim that the mitzvah does not relate to all of these three equally. What can that mean? Says Ralbag, with regard to the first two, me'artzecha umimoladetecha, those are things that Avram needs to do. He needs to actually leave his land, his birthplace. He needs to go from A to B. With regards to Beis Avicha, with regards to his father's household, says Ralbag, that leaving his father's household behind is something that he needs to be prepared to do, if necessary. But it may not be necessary. Should it be the case, imagine that his father's household will decide that they wish to come with. If that were to be the case, Avram would not be required to say, "I'm very sorry, I have instructions to leave you behind." Rather, kol dichven yese v'yechal, they could all join. So when it says, me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha, those are absolutes. Those are categoricals. He has to leave them behind. Beis Avicha, he needs to be prepared to leave them behind. But if they wish to come, so be it. And says Rabag, I will demonstrate to you the veracity of what I just said from two places. One of them is actually quite straightforward. The other will need a bit more background. Who goes with Avram? Well, not many of them are mentioned by name, but some of them are. Have a look at Pasuk Dalet and Pasuk Hay, in fact. Vayelech Avram, kasher diber elav Hashem. Avram went as Hashem commanded. As Hashem commanded, Vayelech ito Lot, and Lot went with him. And in Pasuk Hay, Lot is mentioned again. That itself is a discussion which we've had on other occasions, that Lot features twice as someone that went with Avram. But we should not forget, Lot is a member of Avram's father's household. He's a member of Beis Avicha. Lot is the son of Haran. Haran is the son of Terach. Lot surely qualifies as Beis Avicha. Who's Beis Avicha, if not Terach's grandson? But Lot went with him. And Avram did not leave him behind. And from here you see, says Rabag, that anyone of Beis Avicha that wishes to go with Avram may do so. And perhaps we may suggest, as a parenthetical comment, that this may explain why Beis Avicha is mentioned last. This is a question which many Mepharshim discuss. After all, certainly chronologically, you will first leave your father's household before you leave your country. And yet, it's mentioned last, and perhaps because it isn't really the same as the others. The first two are absolutes. They need to be left behind. Beis Avicha needs to be prepared to be left behind. If anyone wants to come with, as is the case of Lot, they may indeed do so. And then the Ralbag expresses this point even further. We begin with an interesting shaila, and that is, where is Avram born? The pasuk, well, does the pasuk say? Not so clear cut. Indeed, there's something of a machlokas between Rashi and Ramban as to how to understand from the psukim where Avram's birthplace is. Rashi understands that Avram was born in Ur Kasdim. Ramban differs. But if we take Rashi's Perush, and as we will see, the Rabbah concurs with Rashi's Perush, Avram is born in Ur Kasdim. Having said that, if we look at the final psukim of Parshas Noach, so we see that Avram and Terach, in fact, and they all go, they leave Ur Kasdim, they get to Haran, and they settle there. And then we find Lech Lecha, Me'artzecha, U'mimoladetecha. So it's a very unusual situation, because if you just put everything together, something seems to be discordant here. Avram is born in Ur Kasdim. He's left Ur Kasdim. He's in Haran, and Hashem says, leave your birthplace. He's done that. And Rashi addresses this question in the first pasuk in the Dibur HaMaskel Me'artzecha. Rashi phrases it as a question, which he doesn't always do. Rashi sometimes comments, and we need to infer his question. But sometimes Rashi has rachmanas on us and actually tells us what his question is. Me'artzecha, says Rashi, v'lakvayata misham im aviv. He's already left. How can you tell to go? He's left. Uvad Charan, they're already in Charan. Rather, says Rashi, elakach amarlo. The understanding of Lech Lecha is hisrachek od misham. Keep going. Keep going. Lech Lecha doesn't imply that you're there and you need to leave. You may have left already. Keep going. And indeed, this is the answer to the point raised by the Maskil David, that whenever a person leaves a place, they're never called going from there. They're always called leaving from there. It's always called yotzei, never holeich. You never find in the Chumash that a person is holeich from somewhere. He's always yotzei from somewhere. He's holeich to somewhere. Classic example, Parshas Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Charana. The verb of leaving from where he departed is Vayetze. Vayelech is where he went to. So that's actually a bit of an anomaly here, because we have Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. We have Halicha from somewhere. Why? Why not Yitziah? Why not Seilecha? According to Rashi, the answer is simple, because he's already left. He's already departed. He's not in Ur Kasdim anymore, so you can't say leave Ur Kasdim. All you can say is keep going away from Ur Kasdim. That's how Rashi explains al derech hapshat, the understanding of Lech Lecha. Again, this is his response to the fact that Avram is his moladetecha is Ur Kasdim, and he's already left. It means keep going. But the Ibn Ezra, who had to be mentioned at some stage here, the Ibn Ezra has a different approach. And the background to this is the Ibn Ezra's general approach to the concept of Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, which indicates that the order that things are mentioned in the Torah does not necessarily denote the chronological sequence in which they occurred. Now, that principle is stated in the Gemara and can be demonstrated at least once from the Chumash itself. In the beginning of Bamidbar, it timestamps the later event earlier and the earlier event later. Pesach Rishon, Pesach Sheni, Perek Aleph, and Perek Tes. So the fact that the concept exists is not a matter of dispute. But of course, the question is, how now can we apply this with what degree of liberalness will we do so? And here we find the three great Rishonim are on a sliding scale of when they will be prepared to enlist and invoke the concept of Ein Muktam Umu'uchar Batorah, that the Parshas are written not in chronological order. The most extreme, that is to say, the one who uses it most sparingly, is Ramban. Ramban has such high criteria, demanding qualifications to invoke this principle, it almost never happens. We'll almost never apply it, maybe just two or three cases throughout the Torah. The other extreme is the Ibn Ezra. It's interesting because the Ibn Ezra's, his tools are only pshat. He's one of the Baalei HaPshat. He will only approach the Pasukim pshat. But he understands this principle of Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah as a pshat tool to be used wherever seemingly applicable. And he will use it most liberally. And Rashi's in the middle. Not as sparingly as Ramban, not as liberally as Ibn Ezra. That's the spectrum of Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah. As I mentioned to the Talmidim, the difference between these three is that for the Ramban, the principle, or correctly, for the Ibn Ezra, if we begin, the principle of Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah, he keeps it on the dashboard. It's available, it's at arm's reach at any time. Rashi keeps it in the glove compartment. He'll take it out if he needs it. And the Ramban keeps it in the boot with all the emergency equipment. If something breaks down, you will then say Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah. So, after this introduction, Ibn Ezra, if we wish to see a classic example of Ibn Ezra using Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah, it's the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. He directs our attention to the end of Noach, and in the end of Parshas Noach, everyone seems to have left Ur Kasdim already. Ibn Ezra concurs that Avram is born in Ur Kasdim, but in the end of Noach, we've already seen them leave. And then now we have the mitzvah for Avram to leave. Says Ibn Ezra, Ein Mukdam HaMeucher BaTorah. This mitzvah of Lech Lecha was said before anyone left Ur Kasdim. So on the one hand, he concurs with Rashi that Avram is born in Ur Kasdim, that's Avram's birthplace, but he parts ways with Rashi, is that he's prepared to see the command of Lech Lecha as actually having been said to Avram while yet in Ur Kasdim. The final psukim of Parshas Noach were post-Lech Lecha. Ad kedei kach. Ralbag concurs completely in this matter with Ibn Ezra. And that means, says Ralbag, let's consider the following. Who left Ur Kasdim? Everyone, seemingly. Everyone who was anyone left Ur Kasdim. Terach, and so on and so forth. As the Pasuk says, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, the penultimate Pasuk of Parshas Noach, Vayikach Terach, is Avram Beno, Veslot Ben Aram Ben Beno, Sarai, etc. They all left Ur Kasdim and they came to Haran. They never made it to Eretz Canaan. They stopped in Haran. Haran would do quite nicely for Terach. But they all left, says Ralbag. If Lech Lecha, as Ibn Ezra says, and Ralbag agrees, was said to Avram in Ur Kasdim, and Terach left, no one is more your father's household than your father, Terach. How can Terach go with? Avram has been told, as per Ibn Ezra, to leave Beis Avicha behind. How can he take Avicha with him? Rather, says Rabag, that's what I've been saying. Avram needs to be prepared. This corroborates Rabag's understanding. Avram needs to be prepared to leave them behind. If they wish to come with, they did. And each one did to a certain degree. If his father wants to come with, he can. After Haran, he didn't want to go further, so Avram had to be prepared to leave him behind. And Lot is the remaining member of Beis Avicha who went with Avram all the way to Canaan. So this is a very interesting approach, not only for, I would say, for its chiddush, but also for the questions that it touches on, which are all major questions in understanding Lech Lecha. Having opened the parsha, which is really the one of the main parshas of the Nisyonos, the 10 trials of Avram, it's in place to mention, and we may have mentioned in the past, a classic comment of Reb Chaim Volozhin. As we know, the two works we have from Reb Chaim Volozhin are the Nefesh HaChaim, the treatise on matters of Hashkafa, which he himself penned, and the Ruach Chaim on Pirkei Avos, which is actually not written by him, but written by Talmidim based on Shiurim that he gave on Pirkei Avos. That's the Ruach Chaim. And in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos of Ruach Chaim, he draws our attention to an interesting question. You see the Gedolei HaMefarshim, the attention to detail, and what comes out from it. We get the feeling that we were never really reading the same things that they were. The Mishnah says, in the fifth parak, it's all the lists, 10 of this, 10 of this, Asara Ma'amaros, etc. So the second parak the second Mishnah there, Parak Hay, talks about the 10 generations, very apropos for now, 10 generations from Adam to Noah. Asara Doros Minoach Va'ad Avram. 10 generations from Noah to Avram. To teach you, they were all getting progressively worse till Avram came, V'kibol Sachar Kulam. So that's the first Mishnah. It's Mishnah based, the first of the Avram Mishnahs. Asara Doros Minoach Va'ad Avram. The next Mishnah said, is another list of 10, the 10 trials of Avram. Asor nisyonos nisnasa Avram avinu, lodiacha, chibosos shel Avram, etc. Okay. So Chaim Veloshin says, we see an interesting thing. Avram is mentioned in two Mishnayos back to back, and yet he's referred to differently in these two Mishnayos. The first Mishnah refers to him just as Avram. Asor doros minoach va'ad Avram. Anything else? That's it. The second Mishnah, Asor nisyonos nisnasa Avram avinu. So he gets the full title in the second Mishnah, but not in the first. In the first Mishnah, we're on first name only terms, just Avram. The second Mishnah, we get the full Avram avinu. But why? Normally, we would say it's backwards. When you first introduce, give the full introduction, and then one can proceed based on the partial information. But here, that was inverted. And Reb Chaim Veloshin gives a fascinating response to this question. We know that we refer to the Avos generally, even, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, as the Avos, not just because there are four bearers. A father has a relationship to a child in that he bequeaths certain characteristics to a child. And the same is true for the Avos. Everyone post the Avos are the Bonim, in the sense that the Jewish people have certain qualities embedded in them as a result of the nature of the Avos, and more particularly the attainments of the Avos. That is to say, when the Avos passed or did something which was required, the superhuman effort that it did for them, that embedded within their nature that quality, and then from then on passed up to their descendants. It's a very interesting idea, because in a sense, what we would call the spiritual DNA of the Jewish people, it was set as a result of the actions of the Avos. It wasn't natural in the sense that they did nothing and these were their children. It's a function of what they did that became who they are and became part of who their descendants are. The irony is that the concept of a nisayon generally takes a quality that a person exists within a person and expresses it. Had he never been challenged, so that quality would have gone unrealized, shall we say, untapped. It exists in potential, but not in actuality. From potential to actuality is something that is expressed now. But the point is, now that it's expressed, it becomes embedded even further within the person to the extent that it can be passed on to his children. And as if to say, it begins inside as a quality that exists in potential. Once it's brought to the outside, that embeds it further inside. Now it can be part of the essential makeup of the Av and become part of the essential makeup of the Bonim. What does this mean? How does this express itself practically? So far it's a rather speculative sounding or abstract sounding idea. Says Reb Chaim Veloshin, isn't it true? Don't we see that there are certain people who they're doing, even shall we say, quite well for themselves in Chutz La'aretz? Comes a day, they pack up, pick up, and travel to Eretz Yisrael. And it's not easy. And this is Reb Chaim Veloshin. He's talking in the 1700s, 1800s. It's not easy. We have our complaints about the way what's in the supermarket. But back in the day, to make a trip anywhere, and especially to a place like Eretz Yisrael, what possesses them to do this? Says Reb Chaim Veloshin, they are heirs to the gene of Lech Lecha. When Avram traveled from Ur Kasdim and Charan and wherever it is to Eretz Canaan, however you understand what the Nisayon is, that embeds a certain quality, tendency within the essential Jewish makeup that draws them towards Eretz Yisrael. Now it's true, and the Reb Chaim doesn't elaborate on the genetics here, but we know that not every gene is active in every single descendant, and sometimes they're recessive and sometimes they skip a generation, and however it goes, and you find this one person, no one had the blonde hair for three generations, and here he is. And of course it does not mean to detract from the credit of the person himself. I mean, it's not an automatic thing but the spark is there. The same is true even for other things, even what we would say, lo aleinu, for mesiras nefesh and things like that. People would be a Jew from, and not even a Jew who's necessarily so halachically precise in everything he does, but when many Jews over the course of the ages have risen to that ultimate challenge of being prepared to offer their lives. Where does that come from? They have it. They have it from Avram. From Avram or Kazdim, later on in the Akedah. And it's also a Jewish quality, interestingly, to respond sometimes to an adverse situation with an expression of faith. It's interesting. Sometimes when everything is going fine, you'll never hear God's words on their lips. And all of a sudden, they're struck with adversity and they understand everything, it's all in the hands of heaven and we don't know God's ways. And you might wonder, like, where is this coming from? It's not the type of religious thing or the lack thereof that they normally say. But this is also one of the nisyonos of Avram. He came to Eretz Canaan expecting blessing. There's a famine in the land. What's the trial? How does he react when things don't turn out the way he thought they would? And Avram's trial was to say, God has his ways, I need to make my arrangements in the meanwhile, and God willing, everything will work out. That becomes part of Jewish nature, and you'll hear it, and sometimes from unlikely places. So this is what you could call the genetic legacy of the 10 trials of Avram. And that is why, says Reb Chaim Volozhin, if we come back to our question with regards to the two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, the first refers to Avram as Avram, and the second as Avram Avinu. But why only the second Mishnah? Says Reb Chaim Volozhin, because it's only in the second Mishnah that the fact that he is Avram Avinu is of the essence, is material. The first is about Avram's level as an individual. From Noach to Avram, they were not such great tzaddikim. He was a towering tzaddik. That's Avram as Avram. But as soon as you begin to talk about the nisyonos, the 10 trials of Avram, we invoke the idea that he's Avinu because every trial that he passed makes a difference for us because he is Avinu. So this is a very interesting way of looking at the nisyonos of Avram, and from a certain point of view, the actions, right, of all of the avos, there is a concept, it changes potentially the way we look at Chumash Bereishis, because whatever we see as the outstanding achievements of the avos are now markers of what is available within the genetic Jewish pool. The Medrash famously says, it's a Tana Devei Eliyahu, a person is required to say, Chayav Adam Lomar, Masai Yagiyu Maaseh L'Maaseh Avosei, when will my deeds reach the deeds of my fathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? And of course, Mefarshim raised the question, that's slightly presumptuous. There's probably a few other issues that need to be worked out before a person has such aspirations. It seems to be delusional. When will I be like Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Act like a mensch, act like a Jew, and then we'll talk about everything else. But the point is, as the Kotzke Rebbe and others say, Masai Yagiyu here means from the expression nogea. When will I reach some affinity? When will they touch? When will they have at least a point of commonality with the acts of my fathers Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Everyone can aspire to that. And in terms of our discussion, not only can everyone aspire to that as a matter of principle, they can aspire to it as a matter of definition. Because the very fact that the others did it tells you that it's something that a person can aspire to. Because if they did it, you have it. And that's the potential that needs to be developed. So these are some general comments with regards to the nisyonos, which really take all of these parshas that relate to the others out of history and make them very contemporary, because they are now guides for the Jewish people, at least in terms of Yagiyu Maaseh. Moving on into the beginning of, or to the middle now of Perek Yud Gimel, we get to the section of the land of Israel being promised to Avram. It's actually the final psukim in Yud Gimel. So we wish to take a look at Pasuk Yud Dalet. Lot has left. He was actually something of an impediment, as we've discussed on other occasions, to Hashem even communicating with Avram, as Rashi says, but now Lot is gone. And Hashem then now appears to Avram, or says to Avram, Vashem amar el Avram, achrei yipar lot meimo, sona inecho rei, raise up your eyes and see. Min hamokam ashat Hashem, safona v'negba, v'kedma, v'yama. North, south, east and west. Look in all directions. Yes, kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh, the whole land that you see, l'chayetz nena, I will give it to you, ulezarecha ad olam, to your descendants for all time. So this Avram is being told, look all around, this is the land that will be given to you and your descendants. Then, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, we find, Kum Yisalech Ba'aretz, arise, walk through the land, La'arko L'rachba, its length and breadth, Ki Lecha Etnena, for I will give it to you. So what we see from these Pesukim is that Avram is told to do two things. To survey the land, that's in the earlier Pesukim, and to walk the land, that's in Pasuk Yud Zayin. And our question is, what exactly is the measure of these two exercises? What is happening here when Avram is told to survey the land and when he's told to walk the land? What does that achieve? We also note that twice in these Pesukim, Hashem tells Avram that he will give him the land. In the end of Pasuk Tesvav, when he's told to see the land, Ki es kol ha'aretz asher atah ro'eh, the whole land that you see, l'cha etnena, I will give to you, ulezarecha ad olam, your descendants for all time. In the second Pasuk, when he's told to walk the land, Kum es halach ba'aretz l'arka l'rachba, Ki l'cha etnena, for I will give it to you. So that's interesting, because they both have a conclusion about Avram being given the land, but actually the conclusion in the second Pasuk is more curtailed than the first. Because the first Pasuk says, I'll give it to you and your descendants for all time. The second Pasuk says, I'll give it to you. So how does that relate to the earlier concluding words? So the place where this discussion begins is in the Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra on Daf Kuf. And there it discusses various forms of how something can be acquired. And as we know, land can be acquired through a concept called Chazaka. Chazaka is a proprietal act, when a person acts as the owner, assuming that the other conditions are right in order for him to acquire, but the act that acquires is a chazaka, this kind of proprietal act. And an example of this idea, at least for one opinion there in the Gemara in Bava Basra, on Daf Kuf, is our pasuk of Avram walking through the land. In other words, I believe it's Rabbi Elezer who's quoted as saying that by walking through the land, Avram actually acquired the land through Kinyan Chazaka, through this proprietal act. Of course, it's God's to give. And how does Avram receive it? Through this Kinyan Chazaka, which actually changes the way we look at the concluding words of Pasuk Yud Zayin, as if to say, Pasuk Yud Zayin again reads, Kul misalech ba'aretz, arise, walk through the land, la'arko, la'rachba, its length and breadth. Okay, that's what Avram's meant to do. And then the pasuk concludes, Ki lecha etnena, for I will give it to you. We may have been inclined to understand these are, in a sense, there's a lag between these things, as if to say, walk the land for whatever reason, and be aware that at some point in the future, I will give it to you. But according to Rabbi Eliezer and the Gemara there, Ki lecha etnena, for I will give it to you, is a direct and immediate result of walking the land. That's the point. As if to say, walk the land, length and breadth, for thereby I will give it to you. Ki lecha etnena. That's how it will become yours. So says the Gemara. Now this addresses Pasuk Yud Zayin, right, the second Pasuk about walking the land. No one has yet spoken about the earlier Pasuk about Avram looking at the land, because he's just looking. However, at this point, the Meshech Chochma enters the discussion. And Meshech Chochma says, you should know that not only was the second Pasuk an exercise in acquisition through walking the land, but the earlier Pasuk was also an exercise in acquisition through looking at the land. Except, shall we ask, what, is it possible to acquire something by looking at it? Actually, if you consult the Gemara in the end of Maseches Bava Metzia, says Meshech Chochma, Tavkuf Yud Ches, you will see that it is possible to acquire something by looking at it, assuming that it's ownerless. Hefker. If something's ownerless, it's much easier to acquire it because it's not in anyone's possession. It is in a state of non-possession. It's much easier to acquire, so much so that the Gemara, or again for accuracy, an opinion in the Gemara there says, Habata behefker kone. Looking with intent to acquire at a hefker item can actually acquire it. And therefore, Meshech Chochma asserts that the earlier pasuk of Avram looking around is also an act of acquisition. But of course, the question is, well, is the land of Canaan hefker? Is it ownerless? There's probably a lot of people there who do not consider it to be ownerless, otherwise known as its inhabitants. Which means, what do we mean when we say that the land of Canaan is hefker? And the follow-up question is, if somehow we do consider Eretz Canaan to be ownerless, so then why does Avram have to walk the land to acquire it? He's already acquired it in the earlier pasuk through habata, through surveying it. Says Meshech Chochma, when we talk about the concept of acquiring Eretz Canaan, we need to appreciate that the full connection of the Jewish people with the land of Israel is dual in nature. As if to say, on the one hand, and one has to say this correctly, but on a base level, on a temporal level, it's land like other land. It's acquired as other land is acquired. It has physical properties, and one lives there, etc. and so forth. But as we know, that's where the comparison between Eretz Yisrael and other lands stops, because beyond that, it comes into its own. It has so many qualities that are exclusive to it, so many spiritual qualities that only exist for a person who lives in the land, who's connected to the land. So you have the physical connection with the land and the spiritual connection with the land. And now the question is, how many of those are taken at the time that Avram comes on the scene, and how many are yet available for the taking? Says Meshech Chochma, you had the indigenous population, or whatever population they were, who were inhabiting the land, no question about that. In physical terms, it's taken, but it's also true that none of them had connected with and accessed the higher spiritual qualities of the land of Israel. That's not going to happen until Avram comes on the scene, which means in that respect, in the loftier understanding of what Eretz Yisrael is all about, that is available. It's not, no one owns it yet. That's hefker. It's for the taking. And therefore, says Meshech Chochma, Avram acquires the land via two methods, because there's two aspects of the land that he needs to acquire. One of them is taken and one of them is available. With regards to the physical acquisition, there's people there already, which means he needs to do a physical act, and when the time comes, ownership will then be transferred from them to him, or from a certain point of view, it's already his. They are now guests, because the land belongs to Hashem, but there are people there using it, and therefore he needs to extract it from them. That comes through the physical act of walking the land, the kinyan chazaka. But with regards to the spiritual element, that's what happens with the first exercise of look around, and through that you will receive the land. And what's interesting is, it's a phrase that we may take for granted, or perhaps it's par for the course when it comes to psukim. But Hashem's words to Avram in Pasuk Yud Dalet, Hashem Amar Avram, Achrei Parlot, Sono Einecha Urei, lift up your eyes. I mean, that's a classic biblical phrase. People lift up their eyes the whole time. But it always means something. And what does Hashem mean when he says Sono Einecha? What he means is you need to raise your plane of vision as to what's available here, because if you have a more elevated vision, you will see there's something here for the taking, and that will happen by you viewing the land in all directions. If you keep a lower vision of the land of Israel, you're only going to get it through the chazaka, but there's so much more. Raise your eyes, you'll see it, and when you see it, you acquire it. And it's for this reason, says Meshech Chochma, that the conclusion of these two psukim is different. As we noted, in the first pasuk, when Hashem says, look at the land, he concludes by saying in pasuk Tesvav, L'chaitnena ulezarecha ad olam. I will give it to you and your descendants for all time. The second pasuk, walking the land, concludes ki l'chaitnena. Why? Because the tenure of the acquisition and the continuity of the acquisition varies depending on what type of acquisition we're talking about. In terms of the physical connection between Avram and the land, it's never broken because no one else ever takes it. No one else can take it. And therefore, wherever the Jewish people are, ideally in their land, and even if they've been exiled from their land, but it's always theirs in that way. No one has the capacity to take it from them. In terms of the more temporal habitation of the land, some people will at certain points, or could, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not unequivocally say, I will give it to you in the physical sense, in terms of your physical habitation, for you and your descendants for all time. Because there may be times when they may not be inhabiting the land, but it's always theirs based on this higher connection which came from the earlier psukim. So this is, on the one hand, it brings to bear, you see, as the Meshech Chochma so often does, it combines the worlds of parshanut, paying attention to the psukim, where we can read through them quickly, but you pay attention to them. The earlier psukim, the later psukim, why are there two, and why are they different, and what each one's achieving. But of course, he's a Meshech Chochma, which means he's got the whole corpus of halacha at his disposal. So the Gemara and Bava Basra and Daf Kuf and Bava Tzion and Kuf Yud Ches and so on and so forth. And then what emerges is this machshava, understanding of the nature of the relationship between Bnei Yisrael and Eretz Canaan. And what's fascinating is this idea resonates with an earlier comment of Meshech Chochma in this week's parsha. And that is what we see. Or if we begin by his comment. In the beginning of the parsha, it states that Avram is told to go, and he goes. Pasuk Hey says, Vayikach Avram es Sarai Ishto. He took Sarai. And Meshech Chochma quotes the Zohar HaKadosh, which says that when it says he took Sarai, it means that he encouraged her and persuaded her that they should go to live in Eretz Canaan. He described the opportunities that are there, and in that way he took her. I mean he convinced her. I'm not sure how much convincing Sarai needed, but be that as it may, that's what it means by Yikach. And the point is says and the Zohar says this explicitly, because he couldn't have forced her to go. You can't force a person to live somewhere where they're different than when they're living. You can't force a person to move country. So says the Zohar. Rashi touches on this in the sense, Rashi says, Vayikach Avram actually says, where are we? Lekocha bedvarim. I'm not seeing it here, but the Rashi is there. Again, he convinced her. Okay. Except let's go back to the point where the Zohar says you can't force a person to move countries. Says Meshech Chochma, yes you can. Sometimes, specifically if you're moving to Eretz Yisrael, that's the famous sugya at the end of Maseches Ksubos on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, Hakol Malin, Eretz Yisrael. Either spouse can force the other to move to Eretz Yisrael. That's where all of the Gemaras, I shouldn't say all, but a great concentration of the Gemaras about Eretz Yisrael are all in those two or three dapim because of that Mishnah of Hakol Malin, Eretz Yisrael. Which means, and they're moving to Eretz Yisrael, so why does the Zohar says the only way to take her is through convincing her, because you can't really force her to go. Yes, you can. They're moving to Eretz Yisrael. Says Meshech Chochma, it's true. You can't. Each one can force the other. Why? Because there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And why is there a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael? Because of all of the special qualities that exist there. Those qualities only exist there as a result of Avram's acquisition of the land. In other words, from the moment he acquired the land, that's the point that all of these qualities which were latent in the land become actualized. Once that's true, there is now a mitzvah, a standing mitzvah to live there. And at this point, or for this point onwards, either side can force the other to move there, given what's available. But it only became available to Avram acquiring the land. So the only person who wasn't able to force his spouse to move to Eretz Yisrael was the one who actually made it into a mitzvah, because when they moved there, it wasn't a mitzvah yet because he wasn't there yet. So this is classic. And moreover, what we see is that the relationship between the Jewish people and the land of Israel, they themselves are spouses, in the sense that each one actually brings out the best in the other. By which we mean, everyone knows that the Jewish people are at their best when they're in Eretz Canaan, where they're Eretz Yisrael. There's no question about that. But it's also true that Eretz Yisrael is at its best as a result of its connection with the Jewish people, beginning with the acquisition of Avram Avinu. So that's the mutual relationship as expressed by Meshech Chochma. Of course, matters of Eretz Yisrael are really run through much of his Perush, and there's a great deal to say about these things. For our final discussion this evening, let's take a look at Perek Tesvav, what's known as the Brisben Abisari, the covenant between the parts. Unfortunately, we need to skip over so many things in Parshas Lech Lecha. These are the territorial hazards of these Parshas. But we find ourselves at the beginning of Perek Tesvav. And so in the opening psukim, Hashem tells Avram he will have children. And then we find pasuk hey, vayetze yotzeh achutza. He took him outside. Vayomer habid na shamayim, look at the stars, look at the heavens, v'sfar kachavim. Im tuchal lesporos, some count the stars if you can. Vayomer lo kol yezarecha, so will your descendants be as numerous. So this all begins by vayotze yotzeh achutza, took him outside. And the question, of course, is outside of what? And Rashi gives three comments, and the first, as we've seen many times, is Lefi Pshuto. What does it mean, took him outside? Because if you're inside a tent, so you can't see what's the heavens. So we took him outside. Lefi Pshuto. Hotzi'o me'ahalim lachutz l'ros ha'kochavim. He took him outside to see the stars. But then Rashi gives two other perushim. And these other perushim are of a completely different quality. Lefi midrasho, and it is midrasho. But the first explanation is that he took him out of his constellation. That means he took him out of his mazel, out of his natural capacities, so that he'd be able to have children, because Avram is not naturally able to have children. Not Avram, not Sarah. But he gave them that capacity. He removed them from the constraints of their mazel. Or, Davar Acher, the third and final perush, Hotziu mechalala shalolam, he took him out of the world, v'yigbiu lamana min ha-kochavim, and he placed him higher than the stars. And that's why he says, habit na, because habata is always melamala lamata. It's always when you look down at something, that's called habata. Habit mishamayim ure'e. Wow. So, rapidly, we went from Pshuto, where it's just Avram in his tent, and now he's not in his tent anymore. And then we went Lefi Mazolo, and then the third Perush of Rashi is literally out of this world. So, of course, the question is, as we always ask, why not just stay with Pshuto? I mean, Pshuto seems relatively straightforward. What else do we... why is there a need to say anything more? And the answer, as Mefarshi Rashi point out, but always important to note, as much as we would like a straightforward reading of the Pasuk, but certainly you don't wish to have anything which is redundant and perhaps even seemingly imprecise. By which we mean, he said, go outside and count the stars. Why? Because you can't count the stars if you're inside. So why not just tell him to count the stars? As if to say, we'll never know whether he was inside or outside. If the Pasuk says, he said, count the stars, so whatever arrangements you need to make, so make them. But why do we need to know that he was inside the tent? And that, I mean, that's a technical thing. So the very fact that it says that he took him outside sounds like it's something of itself of significance. That's the first point. That's an issue of redundancy, potentially. But the second point is that the Pasuk says Hashem took him outside. But why do you need Hashem to take you outside a tent? You can go outside yourself. Hashem is giving him an instruction. The pasuk should have said, if for some reason we need to know that Aaron is inside the tent and then he was outside. So Hashem should have said, "Vayomer tse achutza, habit na shamayma, go outside, look at," because that's probably what it sounded like. So why does it place it as something that Hashem engineered, unless it's a type of taking him outside that only Hashem could do, as per the second and third Pirushim of Rashi? So again, we always need to be sensitive to even seemingly straightforward words and phrases in the pasuk to understand why Rashi is giving the full response with Pshat and then Drash, etc. Now, there's a very interesting statement in the Gemara. It's actually said in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. This is in the Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin Amud Beis. That Avram was the first person ever to refer to Hashem as Adon, as a master, as if to say, to use the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. He's not the first one to address Hashem by name or to refer to Hashem's name. Noach says, right, Baruch Hashem, Elokei Shem, etc. But in terms of Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, which represents control and mastery, Avram's the first one. Miyom Shebarak Adosh Baruch Es HaOlam, from the day that Hashem created the world, Lo Haya Adam Shekira'o Adon. There wasn't anyone who called him master until Avram came along. And the source is Pasuk Ches. Perik Tesvav Pasuk Ches. The Yomar, where he says, Hashem Elokim. You see the first word, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Bama Eida Ki Erashena. That is the first time Avram, or anyone, and Avram was the first one, and that's the first time anyone has returned to Hashem as the master, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. So says the Gemara. What's the significance of this, and what's the full ramifications of this, so that the Mefarshim discuss? But Tosas raises a simple question. The Gemara has cited as its source Pasuk Ches, Vayomar Hashem Elokim, and the first name is Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. That's Pasuk Ches. But go back to Pasuk Beis of this parsha, of this perek. What does Pasuk Beis read? Vayomar from Hashem Elokim Matiteni Vanuchi Olecharivi. What would you give me? And I'm childless, etc., and so forth. So whatever the content of the pasuk is, but you see literally the same term, Hashem Elokim, beginning with Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. And Tosus raised, therefore, a very simple question. Namely, whenever the Gemara wishes to bring a source for something, and especially as here it's noting the first, so why bring the second and not the first? Why skip over Pasuk Beis and move to Pasuk Ches? That is Tosus' question. In response to this, Tosfos state, and they do not quote a source, but it is to be found in other sources, Tanaitic sources, Seder Olam, which is an early Medrash, that actually these two sections of Perek Tesvav did not all happen at once. Beginning with Pasuk Zion, that's what we call the Bris Ben HaBesarim. In other words, Shishi, conveniently for us, Shishi. Beginning with Pasuk Zion, Ashtani Hashem, Asher Tzitzicha Mirkastim, B'ma'eda, and then you have the whole covenant between the parts, and then Ger Yezarecha, V'dor V'yashuvu Heina, V'acharichin Yezibuchosh Gadol, all of that, what's known as the Bris Ben HaBesarim, that is Pasuk Zion till the end, is not the same episode as the first six psukim. And moreover, it happened earlier. And the source for this is the Seder Olam. And we'll go with Seder Olam's dates. Because according to Seder Olam, Avraham Avinu was actually in Eretz Canaan twice. He came to Eretz Canaan twice. The first time when he was 70. When we see in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha that he's 75, right? Avraham ben Chamesh Shanim, Shivim Shana, B'Tzeisa Mecharon. That is the second time Avraham came, when he came to stay. But 5 years prior to that, he had already visited Eretz Canaan, and that is when he had the Bris Ben HaBesarim at the age of 70, which, by the way, checks out with the Cheshbon of 430 years until we left Mitzrayim, which is an additional 30 years from the 400 when Yitzhak is born, because it's really from the foreshadowing of this whole thing, including those 30 years from the age of 70 to the age of 100. That's based on the idea that Avram has actually received the Bris Ben HaBesarim at what we would call, with reservations, Aliyah Aleph, when he came at the age of 70, and the beginning of Lech Lecha is Aliyah Bet, when he comes at the age of 75. That is a Mukdam Mu'ucha B'Torah. Because the later section discussed in Perek Tesvav happened 5 years before the events in the beginning. of the Parsha. So, says the Tosfos, now you understand why the Gemara cited as its source of Avram being the first one to refer to Hashem as Adon, Pasuk Ches, and not Pasuk Beis. We asked the question, why not bring the earlier Pasuk? Says the Tosfos, this is the earlier Pasuk. This was said 5 years before anything else even happened here. And therefore, chronologically, and we are, the eye here is on the chronology, it's actually the later Pasuk which was said earlier. Wow. So that is an explanation of why Pasuk Ches was quoted. And moreover, says the Tosfos, they proceed to quote the Rashbam. Now Rashbam is a familiar name both as among Mefarshei HaChumash and in Tosfos, because he is Rashi's grandson. A lot of the Baalei Tosfos are Rashi's Mishpacha. Rabbeinu Tam is his grandson. So is the Rashbam. They're brothers, sons of Rabbeinu Meir. Rashbam is Rabbeinu Shmuel Meir. Rabbeinu Tam is Rabbeinu Yaakov. So they all know Rashi very well. They're his grandsons. And they're also Baalei Tosfos. But when you put that combination together, you find every so often Tosfos will quote the Rashbam as a comment that comes from the Chumash. Rashbam is a parish on the Chumash. And that is, one can prove that these did not happen one after the other in a simple way. What did we see in Pasuk Hey? Hashem tells Avram, count the stars. Okay. Which means, as of Pasuk Hey of this parak, it stars out. It's already Tzeisa Kochavim. And just for the sake of the Mishpacha, let's assume it's even Rabbeinu Tam time. So it's already stars out. Now, then we continue. We proceed to read the Psukim, Bamaida, and it's Brisbane of Besarim, and Yodoa Teida, and it keeps going. But then we find in Pasuk Yud Zayin. The sunset. So says Tosfos, will you please explain to me how in Pasuk Hey he's already counting the stars, and in Pasuk Yud Zayin the sun is setting? Since when did Tzeisa Kochavim happen before Shkia? I mean, no one has done that. So, but rather, that's the point. You can see these are really two separate things. In other words, in the earlier part, it was much later on, and that was already the night on some year, whenever it was. This is an earlier thing, and it happened during the day. QED. So says Tosfos. Very interesting. Now we should. It's worthwhile pondering and exploring to the extent that we can whether Rashi here is prepared to invoke the idea of a mukdam u'mu'ucher b'Torah. How can we know? Well, let's see. Let's have a look at Rashi on Pasuk Vav. And Pasuk Vav is really the bridging Pasuk between these two sections, right? It's the concluding Pasuk of Chamishi, and then we move into Brisbane B'Sar. And what does it say? In Pasuk Hey, Hashem has promised Avram children. Pasuk Vav says, Vehem in Bashem. He believed in Hashem. Right? And Rashi comments. Vehem in Bashem. Avram believed Hashem. Lo sha'alo osal zos. He didn't ask him for a sign about this, which is interesting. He never said, how do I know that my descendants will be numerous? It seems that he's accepted. Doesn't require. Aval al Yerusha Sa'aretz Sha'alo Os. But when Hashem promised in the land, he says, but how do I know? How will I know? What's my sign? Va'amalo Bama Eida. Aha. So this is very interesting, this comment of Rashi. We shouldn't miss this very even simple point. and that is, Rashi is comparing the Pasuk's reaction of Avram in Pasuk Vav, to where it says Behemin Bashem, and then Pasuk Ches, to Psukim later, where it says Bama'ida. How do I know? What's my sign? So Rashi says, how can you be asking, and then how can you be believing, and then to Psukim later say, well, how will I know? And that's what Rashi says. It's not the same thing, because he was fully on board and fully accepting of the promise that he'll have children. With regards to the land, that's a separate thing, and then he asked. And Rashi divides up the two things, where he was Behem in Bashem and where he asked for a sign. Again, with all that goes with that. Except one thing seems quite clear from this comment of Rashi, and that is Rashi sees the two psukim, they're all a flow. these psukim are considered to happen in sequence. Because if we imagine for a moment, if we consider for a moment the idea that Rashi understands that Shishi happened 5 years earlier, so where's your conflict? At the end of the day, what happened is, it could very well be that he asked Bama Eida when he was 70 years old. He's now currently post 75 years old. And Vehem in Bashem, maybe initially asked for a sign, and now he believes. One doesn't, there's no, in the sense, there's almost no question, and certainly one doesn't need to answer it. But Rashi seemingly understands there is a question, there is tension. How can you say on the one hand, Vehem, that he believed in Hashem, but everything Hashem is saying, and then he asked for a sign. But that's only tension if these two things are part of the same episode, not if they're separated by years and the doubt actually happened first. And for this reason, it seems quite clear that Rashi here in Parshas Lech Lecha is not like explaining like Tosas, but rather are explaining the psukim are happening in a retzev, and the reason in a continuum sequentially, nothing's out of sequence, and because Rashi doesn't see compelling need to take things out of sequence. Rashi is not beholden currently to the Gemara, to the statement in Brachos, or maybe he'd have a different explanation of Reb Shimon ben Yochai anyway, and therefore Rashi seemingly is not in accord with Tosfos in invoking a Mukdam Urcha B'Torah. I believe there may be another, also very compelling issue. I'll mention it, but then one really needs to go through all of Torah and see whether this is, which is, well, something we hope to do anyway. Shishi begins with the words Vayomer Elav. He said to him. Pronouns. He said to him. Doesn't say who said to who. Now, of course, we know who he is and who him is. Because Vayomer Elav, Ani Hashem, so this Hashem talking to Avram. We know. But isn't it true that at the beginning of a section, we'll always first establish the names and then move into pronouns? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor is a classic beginning to an opening to a parsha. You don't say Vayidaber Elav Lemor. You can't start that way with pronouns. It's not correct. You've got to start with your proper nouns. And then you can base on that. But Shishi, it's just launched into pronouns. But why? Because where are the proper nouns? They're in the earlier psukim. I wonder whether we would be able to say that we're relying on the earlier psukim if those earlier psukim actually happened later. You see, if according to Tosfos, the earlier section, it hadn't happened yet. So Vayomer Elav, if you can imagine this in sequence, so then this actually happened first. So where's your proper nouns? They're not there. So how can you rely on the earlier psukim? It could be that Rashi's position is, if the Torah itself is grammatically presenting the second parsha apropos of that which is already stated, it's because it's already happened. Because if this is an earlier section, it would start from scratch. Whereas for Tosfos, by implication, Tosfos are saying no. Even though this is earlier, but when the Torah has chosen to put it in later, it's with pronouns and all. And that now becomes a very interesting further discussion with regards to the implications of a Mukdam Urcha B'Torah for the chronologically earlier section, relying grammatically on the later one that's written earlier. Okay, that's one to be pursued. But the only question that's outstanding is, what about the proof of Tosfos? Because Tosfos says, I'll demonstrate that it didn't happen because he's counting the stars before the sun is set. How can that be? Says the Rashash in his notes to Maseches Brachos there, Rashi has already provided the answer to that question. Because according to Rashi, when he counted the stars, according to Rashi's third parish, it's because he took him out of the world. If you take him out of the world, you can see the stars regardless of whether it's daytime on earth. And therefore, because Rashi is open to the idea by Yetzir Zochutze, he took him to a place where he could see the stars even if it's daytime. It may as well have been daytime, and then when he brings him back, the sun sets back on earth, post the Brisbane Abisarim. So as we see, every aspect of the discussion needs to be covered and examined according to these different approaches. We'll leave it over here for this evening.